Right. So profs are like, oh, you got to get the cat picture, which is like gone from like basic cat to like scary lip cat.
There's two different scary lip cats. There's lip cat and there's like,
I'll swallow your soul, nya.
But we hear it as the audience where you hear all of these cries for help. And this is the first real instance where we know that maybe the house is eating people. She picks up the phone. She's like, oh, it's not working. Convenient. And so she puts it on. She's like, I'm going to go and get the police. Bye.
Yes, that's
right. And
then right.
She walks out of the house. And then everybody else is like, can we get out of the house? No. No, you can't. Because she locked it behind her.
We cut from the teacher fantasy part to that part and then over to where the teacher's trying to get through traffic, and that's a scene I call commuting is hard. And I get it, but like, he's in this jalopy and he's trying to get through traffic and it's like, wah, 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 wah. It doesn't really matter, because then we go back to Kung Fu, who cannot karate chop her way through the door. And right. Then did you notice they form a line and then they go around the room in the circle no less than like two or three times.
Prof is trying to like reason her way out of this.
And she cannot, because you're in an insane situation.
Mm-hmm. But they do come to the realization that maybe they should go to the lady who owns the house.
Yeah, you're not wrong.
But they can't really find her. So when they go back to brainstorming, someone's like, Melody, can you please play some music? So that way we're feeling better and everything.
We're locked in because she's an old lady and she's disturbed. Mm-hmm. So we should certainly talk to her.
Mm-hmm. But the Melody is playing on the piano and Kung Fu and Prof are on either side. And you see the camera shot going between the two and you see Melody and Fantasy in the middle of the where Melody is playing.
Yeah, and where their heads are knocking back and forth, not knocking, but they're like leaning back and forth to the music, and it's like very creepy. Yeah.
So there's this whole theme in this movie. It's this creepy piano theme, but you can tell it has some significance with the way that everything
dun 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 dun. This is not exactly it.
Right.
When I was a young ghost, my auntie led me into her mansion. That's not a f-ing house. Her cat said it'd be cool, but then she killed all my friends and people. Turned my teacher to bananas.
Which is later. So we really start seeing a ramp up on the horror aspect of it, where they start hearing Gorgeous and Prof and Kung Fu head over.
She's singing out there. She's singing.
And Fantasy's like, I'm going to stay here with Melody, which is not the right best thing. But Melody is playing this music.
Telling me it doesn't sound like the Black Parade.
It does. It does. I'm not saying that it doesn't. Like, when we watched it a few days ago, I was like, oh, my brain. And then it reminded me of the meme on Tumblr where they were talking about, like, you take the tune of the Black Parade, but it's the story about a dad who said that every time you're bad, I'm going to take a bean out of this jar. And when there are no beans left, that's when you know the world is going to end. And it was this way that this parent, you know, was trying to, like, enforce discipline in his house. Yeah, it was just like saying, yeah, it's gonna happen. The world's gonna end if there are no more beans in this jar. And someone set lyrics to it, to the Black Parade. And I kind of love it.
Please post that to our socials.
Oh, I do have to do that, don't I? Anyways.
But who's number three to die?
Melody. She gets eaten by a piano.
First, she's down to nine fingers because the cover slams down on her fingers and eats.
She just raises them up. It's like, ha, 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 I have no more fingers left.
But then she puts one hand down and it eats off her whole hand.
And she's like,
I only have two fingers left because, uh-oh. And then she is what my notes call evil deaded by the piano.
Mm-hmm. She's essentially eaten by the piano.
Evil deaded.
Evil eaten by the piano. Because this house eats people.
Eaten, deviled by the piano.
Eaten, deviled.
Eaten, devid. Eaten,
deviled. Even evil.
Is evil deaded but eaten Devid. It really doesn't matter. Yeah. She done get chomped by that bits. And as it eats her, like they blue screened. Is this what we're accurately calling it? She gets blue screened because it's 1977 and we don't green screen people yet. She gets blue screened into all of her torso bits, and her leg bits and her hand bits and her face bits are hovering around the piano. And of course,
her head,
boobs.
Her boobs.
How does her boobs not? Because we've had like boobs one. This is boobs two.
Mm-hmm. And when they go looking for Gorgeous, the first time when they see her, they notice that her clothes are off. And so this is like the third instance where we're having a teenage girl end up getting stripped before they're getting devoured by a house.
Does Melody have the goldfish on her now?
No. Fantasy. Like as she's getting eaten by the piano, her arm falls off and falls into the goldfish bowl. And that's when Fantasy sees it. And Fantasy, as she's watching this, she does this whole like cross-eyed thing, which again leads me to believe that we're not supposed to take this entirely seriously.
My life isn't meant to be taken seriously, but I have to live it every day. Cause noodle guy.
Right. Fantasy is screaming. She's screaming. And that's when, as Prof and Kung Fu are going to look for Gorgeous, they go back up to the armoire. They find a diary. And then Kung Fu sees that Sweets is in a clock. And that's when she knows that they're in a haunted house. Because at this point, they're like, no, this isn't a haunted house. This is just some weird shit going on.
Let's get out logically.
And so then they come down and they're comforting Fantasy. And they're like, oh, this is a haunted house. And it's at this point we get this really nice scene transition. And I wish so many more scene transitions in movies were like this, though it means that more movies are going to be weird. But
weird.
There's a guy eating noodles who puts his face right in front of Fantasy.
Like, blah, 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 with his noodle face. And she's like, what? And then it like cuts to just his face and then cuts back to Mr. Togo.
Who's eating noodles because he's had a lot of stuff going on. He's had a day. He needs some noodles.
Boy, these noodles are delicious, I guess he would say.
Yeah, that's what the guy who interrupts the last scene says.
So wait.
So basically, we're seeing Mr. Togo still on his way because he wants to get to this place.
Yeah.
And this is interesting because you see like the whole backstory with the aunt and her fiance and how he was, you know, they were going to get married and he was.
The dialogue through the diary.
Right. Well, we find out later that essentially, you know, she's waiting for him to come back. And that's why she doesn't want to leave the house. But like there's this interesting comparison with Mr. Togo coming in and Fantasy seeing Mr. Togo as like this knight in shining armor and everything, and how he's, you know, trying to make his way to the house. And there's like he's legitimately trying to get there and everything. So it's interesting seeing the two parallels.
Yeah, I guess so. But also, Togo seems a bit of a garbage person.
He's a schlub. What are you going to do?
What I'm going to do is dismiss him, because what happens is Gorgeous's face launches into the room as a giant face. And she's like, blah, 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 blah. And I don't remember what she says, because then she transmorphs, which is probably not the right word, into a pair of lips that look so Rocky Horror Picture Show that I wish this was a movie, 2 years later or 2 years earlier?
Two years earlier. It was 1975. But yeah, this is basically where we get the backstory on the fact that the aunt didn't leave and she just stayed in the house waiting, but she died a long time ago. And so she was like literally living off of the girls in the village.
Would you like my full rant right now?
Yes.
I'm going to tell you my full rant right now. You guys, applauders, this is the point of the film where the emphasis is placed on unmarried women. There is no gold star, gold medal. There is nothing special that makes your virginity a thing. That makes you a superior woman. There's no part of you that becomes dirty as you become a sexual being. That's just you becoming an adult human lady person. And you should not be ashamed of that. You should not be afraid of that. And the fact that this movie merely illustrates that these unsullied ladies are worthy of this battle is dumb. And I think a more savvy woman would have called bullshit a whole lot earlier. So I am here for and about and leading all the other ladies to being experienced And I'm mad that this movie makes any woman feel like you are less than because you haven't lived enough. You know?
Would you say that that rant was for all the single ladies? All the single ladies. Because like that, like it feels like this movie is trying to have its cake and give it to the house to eat. Because it's like, oh, see, she went crazy because she had this whole like expectation on like being a bride.
Okay,
and
so she turned the aunt. OK, here, guys, people, the aunt turns into an artist. Right. And I don't know the whole extent of all of existence, but an artist is a person who is like, I take this thing from inside of myself and I put it outside of myself. And it is for people to observe and objectify and to figure out and to relate to themselves and to, like, suss out, right?
How is the aunt an artist?
She was a pianist.
Yeah, she was a piano teacher.
Yeah.
Okay, so is that...
So at one point, she identifies herself as an artist, which is probably why I put it in my notes.
You wouldn't have put it in your notes if you were just pulling it out of thin cloth.
I really would like to not have pulled it out of some weird cat tapestry that shows up like 18 different times in the mm-hmm. film. But here's the thing about being an artist. You take something out of yourself and you give it to another person to give their own value to. And in order to do that successfully, you have to be like, this doesn't belong to me anymore. And that being said, if I take this from myself and put it out there, I still have value. The thing that I've taken out of myself is a product of myself. It is not a depletion of myself. And I know a few professional artists. I do. I wish I was one. I am not. But at least from my weirdo perspective, knowing that you can give this of yourself and not be depleted is a monstrous, and not in a moral way, but a huge step. And that she, as a pianist, was like, oh, my fiance died. Oh, I have myself died. Oh, I need to eat little girls. She has a moral failing as an artist. And it makes me a little mad.
Agreed. Now that you know, mentioned that she would, you know, she called herself an artist, you know, that makes sense.
Mm-hmm. You had more to give, honey, because you are not a unrenewable resource.
You are not defined by one specific man in your entire life.
Oh, did you not getting fulfilled by a man make that you were less than a woman?
Correct. So going back to the movie.
There's a scary cat picture now.
There is. It's like, so earlier we see all of these cat pictures and everything and they point them out and one of them is like, oh, that looks just like Blanche. Gee, I wonder why.
Blanche!
Anyways, so like, let's see, fantasy prof and kung fu are all kind of huddled together. And that's when the house really starts going on the move. And kung fu's like, I'm right there. And she's like, doo-doo-doo, doo-doo. And
you think she would die one way? But Kung Fu is like, nah, bro.
Yeah.
I'm going to die a whole different way.
Kung Fu is pretty much fighting the house as Prof is trying to figure out a reason as to like what they can do to end this.
Oh, look, there's the cat picture. You should kick it in the face.
Before that, she like actually Kung Fu's herself outside of the room. And
yeah, she fights the death bride that is gorgeous, dressed up as the death bride.
Also, you think that she's going to get killed by the phone, but she doesn't get killed by the phone.
She gets choked out by the phone, and she's like, no, I'm not dying like a
bitch. And then she...
Kung Fu is the most morally redeemable character in the entire film.
And then she fights Ghost Gorgeous, and then she like makes her way back into the room, and that's when...
She goes to Kung Fu the door. No, okay, so she jumps up.
Right, so Prof's like, oh, you got to get the cat picture, which is like gone from like basic cat to like scary lip cat.
There's two different scary lip cats. There's lip cat and there's like,
I'll swallow your soul, yeah.
Down here, we're all cats. I'll swallow your cat. I'll swallow your cat.
But then she Kung Fu goes for it, like with this like kicking thing.
Yeah, but
and her head goes into the ceiling. There's the ceiling light, and it's just like she's just kind of like
she's so self-aware until that moment where her head goes into the lamp that it feels painful,
right? And then we get to see what she sees, and essentially like her head is up in there, and then we see her like body swirling in the movie. And then if you're watching this on HBO Max, you'll see there's like a frame that's being shown, and it's Kung Fu's head and a bunch of these blue heads behind her, and it's essentially, I think, to represent the souls that the house has eaten.
I think you're right. It's certainly the title poster that HBO uses. Mm-hmm. I don't think it's as obvious as that, so much as they have used a lot of like weird animation, like on the train they use animation, and it feels non sequitur because it's very illustrative, mm-hmm. as opposed to like blue screened or the straight up animation. You've got this realistic head on this body of blue faces. It makes me want to punch it a little bit. And that's Kung Fu. Kung Fu is the blue face?
Yes.
I would, let's not lie, make that a movie poster I would hang on my wall.
But that's not the best part. It's not even the best part that she sees her friends with their disembodied body parts, like, you know, swirling around. It's the best part of this moment is where her disembodied torso.
Wait, hold a second. Lydia, boobs number two happens.
Yeah.
Her disembodied body parts are floating around the blue face, yeah. whatever. And so you see her torso. You see her legs. You see her arms. You see her boobs. You see her head. And then all of that goes away. And then you.
Then you see her disembodied torso get itself out of the ceiling light, mm-hmm. and do a karate kick, or excuse me, a kung fu kick to the cat poster. Mm-hmm. And that's where the cat's like, ah, and you see the cat like saying, ah, and you see Gorgeous like, ah, and then it's like, it starts breaking down. You can tell that this is definitely a bad omen, so to speak. But to be fair, if I were to like die and still be effective, I would love my bottom half to still like in a position of kicking, still hit its target.
Oh, I'm just saying. 100%.
So after Kung Fu's disembodied legs destroyed the cat picture, I think there was a chest of drawers that ate her feet, her ate her leg.
Well, it was cute. I liked very Evil Dead style, like the chest of drawers open and shut real fast without any kind of like visual ghostiness. It feels very poltergeisty.
Mm-hmm. But it also like opens up the top part and like spews out blood. It's pretty great. And that's when we get back to
I called it the freaky cabinet, but then also the cat poster.
Yeah.
It starts puking blood itself out of the weird freaky
right.
Cat face.
And don't we like go back to Mr. Togo, who like finally gets to the area and he like goes to the guy with the watermelons?
Professor girl, mm-hmm. who they call her Prof, right? Yeah. And Fantasy,
they're like floating on the blood, and then it cuts to Mr. Togo.
Yeah, they're on like the Tommy mats or whatever on the floor start floating, and then they're hanging on to those guys. And then we cut to Watermelon Guy.
Mm-hmm.
He's scared by when Mr. Togo shows up, and he's like, "Do you like watermelons?" He's like, "No, I like bananas." And he's like, "Ooh!" And
just the weirdest interaction.
Yeah.
And like at this point, the Jack-O-Melon has like a candle in it, and I love it even more.
It's awful, Lydia. It's awful. And then Togo throws himself into the car, and he's like, "Bananas, bananas, bananas, bananas." Bananas. And it's what like, happens? What happens when you juggle bananas?
You get gorillas.
Did you say gorillas? Stupid.
Yeah.
So then, Prof's glasses fall off her face into the blood water.
She's like reading through the diary, trying to find something else that's going to stop all of this right now. And her glasses fall off, and so she's like, "I can't find my glasses." And she goes, does that thing with anybody who has had glasses and loses their glasses.
Yeah, she straight up Velmas into the water.
Yeah,
she
actually gets dragged into the water by like a canister with teeth.
It looks like a jug, like a wine jug.
Yeah,
and then Then we get boobs number three.
Right. Before that, we do get this moment where that canteen has like the glasses on it. And it looks kind of adorable. Again, like there's some puppet work in this that I kind of love.
I get it. But like, I don't get why all of her clothes have to come off right. while she's in the water first.
It's like to prove that she's like, you know, getting dissolved into the cat blood because yeah. cats are like, all cats have acid for blood and they are all aliens.
So whatever, Professor is down and she's number five.
Fantasy, like before Professor gets dissolved, she's like, maybe Mr. Togo's not going to show up, as like a way of trying to get her, get Fantasy to not see that Mr. Togo's going to come and save him. Like, maybe you don't need a knight in shining armor to come and save you.
Yeah, we kind of do because no one ever comes.
Mm-hmm.
So she's on this Tommy mat paddling towards the steps that have been barricaded. But then Gorgeous is there. Gorgeous's Phantom Bride is there.
Mm-hmm.
And then Fantasy's like, oh, save me. Gorgeous is like, oh no, I'm totally going to you as I'm a Phantom Bride person. And then when Gorgeous embraces Fantasy,
mm-hmm.
her top comes down and we get boobs number four.
Mm-hmm. And then we see Fantasy for a brief second see the ant instead of Gorgeous, but then she like shakes her head and all she sees is Gorgeous, and she just sort of like embraces her and calls her mommy,
which is super gross. But now we assume that Fantasy is death number six,
mm-hmm.
I guess.
Yeah, because like throughout the entire movie, when a death is about to happen, you see Blanche's eyes turn green, sparkle green. And you see that with Gorgeous when she's embracing Fantasy.
So Gorgeous is now mom, auntie, Blanche.
Yeah, pretty much.
Weird. But you know what? It's time for some Ryoko.
Next morning, Ryoko shows up. She's driving to the house and everything.
She goes to the watermelon stand and there's a mysterious pile of bananas.
Which is actually maybe death six. Maybe Fantasy is...
I only really count the girls' deaths. I don't care about dudes.
Sorry, Mr. Togo.
Togo's a pile of bananas, we assume now.
Yeah.
But
he only dies when people eat him.
So, like, Ryoko's having this whole, what I would call, the wonder, the joy, the what the f***.
She's just like the entire scene drags on as she's walking through the house trying to find someone.
This is where we talk about when we were watching this. This is mm-hmm. where we realize that the Bechdel-Myers test is passed by this movie.
Yep.
And it hurts so bad. It
hurts real bad.
Oh, and then Ryoko's like, baby birds, butterflies, flowers. And then my notes go.
That's the song that's playing as she's walking
really,
through it.
But also birds, butterflies, flowers, and my last nerve with this film.
Okay.
Gorgeous silently beckons her in. The cat paintings behind her.
Mm-hmm.
Her stepmother, soon to be stepmother, is wandering through the garden outside, and then Gorgeous opens one set of sliding slats, and then she walks behind another set. Okay, so the first one, you see these paintings of cats behind her. Mm-hmm. They all look like Blanche. Then she opens the second set that open entirely over the first set of slats. So it's like right. double the scene for half the money, I suppose. And then she's like, she kneels in that way that they do in animes, which I assume is like a Kyoto kind of like kneeling in front of a person to show submission. And it's like, come into my interior, you know? Mm-hmm. And she's like, oh, what a good, kind little girl. Oh, you know, it sucks.
Right.
It legitimately sucks.
Right. And so they're having this exchange and she's like, where are all your friends? And Gorgeous is like, oh, don't worry. They'll be up. They always get up when they're hungry.
At one point, she juggles again.
Yeah. Very, very poorly.
But aren't they illuminated? Doesn't she have like hyper shiny balls?
Like earlier at night, they're illuminated. But during the day, they're not as glow in the dark.
When she says, oh, my friends are sleeping and they're going to wake up hungry.
Mm-hmm.
When she says, oh, they're going to wake up soon. My notes go, not for very much longer.
and then we see like Ryoko's like scarf bellow in the wind, and then she gets set on fire.
Yes, barbecued on the spot. Number seven is Ryoko.
Mm-hmm.
Sorry, you were in for three scenes. You dead now. I call it the witchy wonderland ending.
Good. And then we end the last shot of the movie is one on Gorgeous.
Just, she's like tossing her hair back and forth, being super witchy. And once that's the Wonderlandy part, she's like, I'm just embracing all of this that I've pulled down on everyone I love and everything is dead.
And then we get the ending credits where it's just gorgeous running through the field and then the house being animated in that weird 70s way.
So it's like a picture of the house in a very Schoolhouse Rock sort of way, would you say?
Yes.
And then it's the title, the credits, and they give lots of names and stuff, which I don't remember all of. And
all of the girls come out at the very end.
They're so cute jumping in and looking in their face. They like Matt comes out and she's like, Mama! And then like all of them come out and do like a little pose. Right. Which I liked, but then like it's done.
Yeah.
And we're all like, look, if you didn't clap the dust off your hands and be done, did we watch the same movie? Applauders, did you watch this movie?
Right.
Are you going to?
Probably not. They're going to just leave it to us to watch it. And then that's the end. Yay!
We have to shocked and applaud moments.
I
this know. Liz.
I was trying to like get this done and over with because I could see you were suffering.
I am suffering.
So should we get our applaud moments out of the way? Because I think you got a lot of shocked moments.
Mine are all stupid.
Yeah. Mm. My applaud moment is pretty stupid. So I don't mind starting with that.
Do it.
Okay. So do we have any other Sean facts that we want to talk about?
Yeah, we have a couple of things to finish up, wrap up here. So I had mentioned that Obayashi incorporated themes of the atomic bombings of Hiroshima and Nagasaki because he was born in Hiroshima and lost all of his childhood friends to these bombies. And Obayashi applied these themes with the plot element of the woman's ghost waiting for her lover's return from World War II. The woman's bitterness about the war turns her into an evil spirit that devours the girls who were unaffected by the bombings. So I couldn't really mention before that it was her bitterness that turned into an evil spirit without, you know, kind of showing that this is actually a horror movie with people dying. And there is one final thing, which is a sort of an epilogue, if you will, to this movie.
It really deserves one, don't you think?
Shortly after the film's release, Obayashi proposed a story for what would have been the 16th Godzilla film. Had that film been made, it would have used the same crew as this film, with Godiego once again providing the music. This story told of a little girl named Momo, who discovers the dead body of Godzilla. After being dissected, Godzilla is revealed to be a pregnant female alien named Rosen, who died of diabetes. The brain of the dead Rosen instructs the human that she must return with her unborn son to the planet of Godzilla, and so her body is converted into a spaceship. The newborn child would be reunited with its father, and they would have fought a female monster that shot fire from her breasts. Unfortunately, this project was discarded by Toho and was instead released as a short story in the Japanese edition of Starlog magazine, the artwork being done by future Akira director Katsuhiro Otomo. The story lists the credits as if it was a feature film with Obayashi as director. Naomi, you're raising your hand.
Jen, darling. Did Godzilla die from diabetes because he ate sweet?
No, it was because he ate Mac every day of his life.
Still a better Godzilla movie than the Matthew Broderick one.
Don't you doubt 1997?
Nine? I don't know.
It left such an impact that you couldn't remember the year.
Oh, no.
That's it. That's all from Sean.
Oh, thank you, Sean. Sean,
thank you.
What I'm
going
to thank you for?
Sean, thank you.
This is, Lydia has said in other episodes, this is a movie I have seen.
And that's it.
But we can applaud and shocked it. It's got merit. Let's do it. We want to start with shocked or applaud?
I will go with applaud because I got that right in front of my brain.
Do it.
Okay, so my applaud moment is I love the puppet work on this movie. I mean, it seems so inconsequential, but like that Jack O'Melon, that gave me life after seeing this movie. It was the one thing that stuck with me that I was just like, I love this movie. And then you see like the dancing skeleton, and like just imagine this movie getting done with Jim Henson Studios, but it was a Muppet version of it.
I would like this much more with a Jim Henson flair. I feel like that gives a level of quality that I have appreciated in so many films. that may be lacking here.
Right.
Like, that seemed like a second or tertiary thought. Like, that being said, like, if I had been able to focus on those things more, I probably would have been much more in the cooler. I would have been much more chill about this. I would have been much more frigidaire, which is refrigerator and debonair added together for me.
Right.
But like, I get it. Like, I want that. I want that. I wish I had had that. I didn't have that suspension of belief for myself.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah. And that was there for me. It was that and that one transition. Because like, my shocked moments kind of talk a little bit about the transitions. I'm just going to spoil that for you. So, yeah.
What if we did that for... Okay, look. What if you did your shock, your plot, and then you're shocked? And then, yeah, yeah. Do your shocked. Go
my
for it.
Shocked moment, because that's switching things up.
Oh, yeah.
My shocked moment is the f-ing transitions on these scenes. Like, it's just like, oh.
Except for that one noodle one, right?
Except for the one noodle one. That was the one good one. And I want more scene transitions like that. I want to like write screenplays where I do scene transitions like that. Not the point. Most of the other transitions are just sort of like, you know, oh, you're dying in a house. Well, guess what? Mr. Togo's here and he's getting turned into bananas. You know, it's just little things like that that are just sort of like, hit me up against the head with a brick,
like,
and it feels that feels more succinct than the scene transitions in this movie.
Yeah. I'm saying that the beat was like one too late or one too early, and
right.
It didn't hit you exactly square.
And it didn't feel like it flowed. It felt like it was just sort of going from a beautiful like orange that's similar to like the sunsets, and then it's just sort of like neon green. Yeah, it's like you get this beautiful soft like orange, and then it's just like the same kind of green that you would find in like, I don't
like an
your living space is too gorgeous. I can't really like, you know, find anything that's overly garish.
Yeah, well, I do go for the neutrals, but I feel you when when you say garish, it's like there's a starkness between one and the other,
right?
Where we have this beautiful flow, almost maybe even flavor wise, you would say that it was like this sweet to this mellow. And then they're like, hey, by the way, guess what this is? And you're like, I don't know, what is it? And they're like, habanero. And you're like, oh no, we weren't going for spicy right now.
I was actually thinking like going flavor wise. It's like you get this piece of chocolate, and it's just this nice dark chocolate. And someone tells you it's got like this creamy, truffly middle. And you're just like, oh, I'm going to do that. And then you bite into it, and it's the fake banana Nilla wafers.
No.
Yeah, it's like chalky and it's like artificial and it doesn't taste good at all.
I feel that way about runts, banana runts.
Yeah.
Do you know people just eat banana runts as if they were not human?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Blasphemy. Hate it. Jen, do you want to lead the way? You want to Rochambeau me for it?
No, let's just go for you.
Okay.
Applaud.
Okay. My applaud moment is women are doing it for themselves. Like, you could have taken every man out of this and it would have been fine. It would have
been better.
It might have been better. Save for the hot doctor.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Like just bring Mr. Togo in there and you don't have to keep cutting to the fact that he's there. It could just be on the peripheral. Like, oh, yeah, he's totally coming. He's totally coming. He's totally coming. He's totally coming. And then he just doesn't.
He's just.
Yeah.
He basically does. Like, I liked that there were a lot of strong female characters, even in the male gaze of it.
For a close to 45-year-old movie.
Yeah. Like, I'll take it. Like, 77's way before me, nearly a decade before me. And I'm like, all right. You see a bunch of strong female characters. Yeah, some of her witchy, some of her ghosty, some of her just the stereotypes that they needed to be in the film. But they all were strong fighters. Hey, Kung Fu is like my girl.
Mm-hmm.
And I would 100%. I want her polka dot bottom drab tank top self. Like, if I could pull that off, I would pull it on 100%. She's like, hey, we need that cabinet open. I think I'll just ninja kick it. And she just does it because that's who she is. She's just a powerhouse of a person. And all of the women aren't necessarily throwaway characters. They all have at least a narrative that gives them validation that even if you take away the men, are like,
Or replace the men with sexy lamps, so to speak.
Yeah.
Because even Gorgeous's mom, like, what part of the reason why she was kind of envied by her sister was because of the fact that she became a bride. Mm-hmm. But she chose to be a bride. And we saw Gorgeous's dad. And so it's like,
Gorgeous's dad is not a looker.
No.
Lydia.
Yes.
You know I love you.
Yes.
We can take all the men out of here.
Yes.
Jen, you too. And we can, they don't have to even be sexy lamps. They could be like mildly attractive glow sticks. You dudes. Okay.
Shocked.
Hey, my shocked moment is I get that it's camp, right? But it's camp that is unrecognizable. And that I have a problem with. It's not, and I get that it's pre the era that I grew up in. I get that it's not like as in your face and obvious as things like you might think of, Hey, But I'm a Cheerleader or Rocky Horror Picture Show, even though that came out first. But it, again, that was closer to home. It was more accessible to me years, even years and years and years later. I get that they were going for camp. I didn't feel like it landed for me, but that might be in the view that it's not a humor that I'm used to. It is not a style that I am terribly familiar with. The Asian sense of humor, and I say that broadly, is not something that I am. Okay, who's the guy who does puppets? The guy who has like the purple puppet and like the old man puppet.
Jeff Dunham.
Jeff Dunham, right? Would you throw him into Asia and be like, you'll find this funny. Hold on.
No.
So he is a fairly broadly, acceptably funny comedian.
But only for Americans.
I don't think he would translate terribly well in lots of different directions off the globe, right?
Right.
And I feel like there are certain aspects of this Japanese humor that don't hit me very well. Like, even if this dude, the director, writer, took his daughter's sense of horror and then put a funny twist on it and then, like, threw it up on there in the guise of, like, trying to follow up Jaws, like, it didn't hit square for me. But, like, maybe it's not for me. But in light of that, in light of only myself, and this is not a super broad light lamp shining hither and thither, I don't think the camp landed for me very well. There are parts that I liked very much. There are parts of this film that were like, if Lydia hadn't pointed out the melon, gourd melon lantern.
Jack-o-melon.
Thank you. Sorry. The Jack-o-melon. I would have been like, whatever. And that's fine. But like, now that it's done, I'm like, it kind of leads me to, who would I share this film with?
Right.
You know, which is where I land a lot of times, because I'm a person who, if I enjoy a thing, I'm going to share it with whomst ever. Mm-hmm. And I don't know who I'd want to share this film with.
Right.
And that squarely gray area, I mean, considering the fact that our fudging podcast is called Shocked and Applaud, like, am I terrifying you with this? No. Am I, like, enthralling you with this? No, but that might just be squarely on my own ignorance. And I mean, I have to learn to be comfortable, at least. I have to live with that.
There was a moment where you have the theme of the movie being meowed by a cat.
Wait, what?
Yeah, it was when the creepy aunt was dancing and they're doing like, you see the cat, like, you know that they probably put the cat on the piano and the cat walked across the piano keys. But then you have that meow. Meow, 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 meow.
Yes, it sounded like the cat Christmas videos from the 1990s. I mean, ahead of its time, let's be fair.
Like, and that's my jam, apparently. Also, like, a creepy lady who's, you know, dancing with a skeleton. Apparently, I find that really entertaining as well. I'm not saying that I'm difficult on my entertainment, but it's still like, okay. Like, if it's not your jam, I can totally understand it. It's just cat. Meow, 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 meow.
Be about it. Hey, Jen, hook us up with your shock tone, your applaud, in the reverse order.
My applaud is that this movie gives hope to a lot of independent directors who don't know that they can just convince a studio to produce garbage, and they will. Like, all you have to do is make a manga and some business cards and an audio drama. Just become a fan boy or girl or whoever for that studio. And then I'll do it myself. And then you can produce same equal quality films as the one that we have reviewed today. I think that there are elements of this that, yes, don't translate well into North American audiences, but there are certain elements that I think, you know, reminded me of old Vincent Price films like House on Haunted Hill and a little bit of Sam Raimi, more Evil Dead 2 than Evil Dead 1 because of some of the more slapsticky feel to it. But if you're an independent filmmaker and you want to direct something, ask your daughter, your 12-year-old daughter, what's scary, and then go write that thing, and then go hound Universal Studios.
So what you're saying is I need to go upstairs, ask my 12-year-old nephew what scares him, and then I need to create a comic book based off of like one of the Marvel properties that's mixed with that horror. And then I just need to go to Disney and send them something every hour for a year, for three years. And then maybe they'll just be like, here's like $1 million. Stop bothering us.
I mean, I say it mostly tongue in cheek, but yes, that's all you have to do is create your own Marvel. And then they'll just offer you the cinematic universal rights to it. Just go off and create a Marvel, you know, like Stan Lee did all those years ago. So I applaud that. I am sure, even though we don't know what the budget was for this film, that it made a lot more than it cost.
Definitely.
It had to have.
And I am really surprised that this has not hit Riff Trax or any kind of MST3K.
Yeah, we haven't seen it anywhere.
Because parts of it are sort of like very Manos, Hands of Fate, especially with the watermelon seller. He reminds me of the servant character in Manos.
If it had hit me more in the way that Manos had, I think maybe I would have been more like, well, that's the thing. I was more understanding, probably culturally, of Manos. And maybe that's my personal downfall for this film. But like, if it had been handed to me as like this beautiful piece of garbage.
Yeah, I think it's a Sharknado for its intended audience. It's maybe wasn't its target audience, but it was mostly teenage filmgoers that were buying those tickets. So if you get something aimed at that teenage audience, probably try to make it more PG-13 than this movie was. This was an unrated Japanese film, and it shows so many boobies.
Hey, Jen, what's your shocked moment?
My shocked moment is that some man went to his daughter, asked her what a scary thing is, and he came back with this idea of tormented little girls getting naked. And I don't understand from a parental experience, a parental mindset, how you go from, I got this idea from my little daughter, and it becomes this just very adult themed in some aspects thing. I don't know how you get there.
You know what's surprising is, I mean, in adjacent to what you said, it's mature. There's lots of death and there's lots of blood and there's lots of like things chomping other things, right? But this movie is not sexual in any way.
Correct. Yes.
Isn't that, I mean, like refreshing? Well, our last movie wasn't sexual in any way either. And even The Cell 2 movies ago wasn't, I mean, they had like a brief second, but even Vince Vaughn and J-Lo's electric dark lip could not bring in the sexy like at all, right? Like the closest thing to sexy in The Cell was a scene I don't want to talk about.
Which was not sexy at all.
It wasn't sexual. Yeah. It was just a physical thing.
Right. It was informational.
Mm-hmm.
So I read that like the girls especially had a difficult time kind of finding their character and acting in this. They didn't understand what kind of movie it was supposed to be. And then they would start playing some of the soundtrack on set, and that helped a little bit. And then he would play games with the girls. Not like you know, like teasing things, but actual like games. And
we're to play hopscotch now.
But he was
He was
trying to build maybe a little bit more than rapport with these girls.
No.
And at one point, the actress that played Gorgeous, she has a partial nudity scene.
Her boob is out.
Yeah, her boob is out, and she felt very uncomfortable with the scene. And instead of the director saying, "Well, maybe we don't have to do it with the nudity," he's trying to figure it out, and the actress that plays the aunt says, "Here, it's okay. I'll get naked with you. I'll get naked too on set so you feel more comfortable." And then the director said, "That's great. I want to add your boobie in this too," which is not the way a director should go with things, I think, and keep it professional. So there's a little bit, again, I'm sorry that my commentaries tend to be, "This crazy thing happened behind the scenes." But again, this crazy thing happened behind the scenes.
That's not acceptable.
I love the fact that you actually do that kind of research, because it's hard not to like infer that as someone who, like, again, 45 years past this time, and like you see that now and you're just sort of like, they're teenagers, that's kind of gross. And I get that Japan's a different culture and everything, and you know, the age of consent, or like the like 16 year olds are seen as more adults over there. Still, it's like, I don't know, like I have misgivings about an 18 year old being seen as an adult in America, so maybe I'm just a prude. But I'm glad that you brought it up, because we do need to be bringing those sort of things up. I'm glad that you saw that bit on behind the scenes. So you're doing good.
Thank you. I have this feeling that no matter what came out of the little daughter's mind, there were going to be schoolgirls running around being killed. Like, that part, I'm pretty sure was his idea.
Mm-hmm.
So I there's a creep factor to it, I guess.
Yeah.
I think that is part of why I struggle with this, is I felt like a creepy observer of like a weird schoolgirl thing. But hey, this is a movie that I've seen. Hey, applauders. You made it.
All the way through October.
Was it spoopy enough for you? Because I'm just fully accepting the word spoopy now as a acceptable, spooky, but entertaining.
Entertaining?
Nomenclature. Hey. Hey. This is a movie that I have seen. And hey, that you've listened to. And also, like, thanks for participating and being here with us. The three of us have always enjoyed over the past 3 years. Yeah, like three years of sharing movies with you. Mm-hmm. Like we've been enjoying sharing just what enthralls us and enrages us about everything. And that's why we call you applauders, because sometimes you cheer in joy. Sometimes you cheer in disgust, and wherever you land, hey, that's a movie you saw that one time, or at least heard us rant about for an entire month.
None of our changes with now being part of the, is it Frolic?
Frolic, yeah. Frolic is the network, and frolic.media is the website.
Yeah. Now that we're a part of that, it really doesn't change any ways that you can get back to us and reach us. You can still get in touch with us on Instagram and Twitter at Shocked Applaud, and Facebook at Shocked and Applaud. And hopefully you've enjoyed whatever recommendations that I've thrown your way this month, whatever those will actually be in the end.
Hey, applauders. This is Naomi. I'm married to Jen McQuaid, who's about to do a bumper at the end of this episode. And my, isn't she good looking? She might do a weird voice or make a pun, and I want you to know that I really, really like it when she does all of that stuff. So, thank you for joining us this month. We look forward to seeing you in November.
Is it your choice next month?
It's my choice next month, and I have not decided yet.
Until that time, this is Jen McQuaid.
This is Naomi McQuaid.
And this is Lydia Malcolm.
And this is Shocked and Applaud. Thank you so much for listening.
Hey, oh, you finished part three of a walkthrough of 1977's House. Come over here and give me an elbow bump over here. You want to listen to more shows? We got some really big players on the Frolic Network over at frolic.media, and you should check them out for your ear holes. We got K-Bay, with two queer friends who watch Korean dramas because they're so great. And aren't they great? And the next one, it's called Honestly? It's a show with two friends from Toronto who think critically about music, TV, YouTubes, and even podcasts themselves. Sounds good, yeah? Hey, oh, this is your audio engineer and the worst sounding Mario you ever heard, you heard? Happy Halloween, you little Goombas. Why not visit shockedintheplot.com and leave us a review about how bad a movie this was and how bad this ending was? And maybe about how much you enjoyed the thing when we was talking about it. Well, okay, we're gonna hit the pipes now, but we'll be back with something super November 9th. Yip, yah, yahoo, yippee over here. From shockedintheplot.com, thank you for patroning the peculiar.